You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
The JSE has closed its doors for another day, so it's time for the 5 o'clock shadow. And as always on a Thursday, I speak to the double-headed dream team of David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities, sometimes in Johannesburg, and Viv Govender from Rand Swiss, mostly in Johannesburg. And Viv, I'm going to start with you, because I was talking to somebody yesterday about a word that I haven't used for a long time called stagflation. And there's a tiny sort of microcosm of a hint of it today, with inflation in the United States going up a little bit more than analysts projected, i.e. 3.3% for CPI year on year. And also some employment data which wasn't quite as good as expected. No chance of stagflation, of course, but it sort of made the market think a bit. What do you think, Viv?
Yeah, I mean, most definitely. I mean, we saw jobless claims go to about 258,000. This is the people that are claiming jobs, jobless benefits. And I think that is obviously, partly due to things like, hurricanes and stuff. Not the current one, but I think the previous one also was, quite important. And there was a Boeing strike that was also affecting things. So this was about basically 30,000 more than the market had been anticipating. And in the CPI number, like you said, it came in at 2.4 versus 2.3 expected. But it's still down from 2.5, you know what I mean? So it's falling, but not falling as fast as the market would like. So I do think it's a case of, the good news is not quite as good as the market would like, but it's not terribly bad as well. Once the hurricanes are over, I think we'll have, and the strike is over, we probably will have, jobless claims return to more normality. And a 0.1 miss on inflation is not a huge deal, especially when you consider just how these things are often surveys of things and so on.
Yes, well, David Shapiro is there, and he's assessing the mood of inflation. He goes to, I think, Vivi goes to Whole Foods every single day and gets himself a lunchtime salad, having gone for his run in Central Park and getting a bagel and an orange juice. And David, sorry, I'm talking behind your back here.
No, it's fine.
What is the mood there? Let's talk about floods and inflation, first of all, and the general mood in, where are you today, Boston or New York?
Boston. Now, I've been in Boston for the last week, and it's quite intriguing because we celebrated the Jewish New Year.
Yes.
So there were two big dinners that I attended with a lot of expats who were doing very well here. In fact, I must comment on that. But you know, the dinner time table, the talk turns to politics, and that becomes heated. You know, that really becomes heated, whether you're pro Kamala or you're pro Trump. And believe me, there still are Trump supporters.
Okay, before we get on to that, I just want to contextualize this. Was it because of the attitudes of the two candidates towards the Jewish people or Israel, or was it just generally?
I think generally, and also a big sway towards Israel. Yeah, there is that attitude. But I mean, it depends where you are. In fact, I've gone to two different lectures, and what's intrigued me, and especially in the Boston, you have no idea the size of the community here and the wealth of the community here. I'm talking the Jewish community.
Yes,
an enormously powerful voice. Certainly here. I was taken aback by the size, both in New York and here. We're a very small community in South Africa, but their ability to raise money and to raise their voices, and they don't hide their faces. They don't hide behind masks, and they're openly supportive. So it's I'm not taking, I don't want to be drawn into the discussion, but I'm saying it is a very much, it does sway their politics in a big way. So you get the two, I'm on the side of, I can't stand Trump. I mean, I cannot tolerate the man. And
we'll talk about that. Yeah.
Yeah, we are.
He was wearing a yarmulke at an October the 7th memorial service or something, and I thought, you're such a hypocrite. But anyway, we'll talk about Trump later on. Please go on.
So from that point of view, there's two different camps. Those who detest Trump, regardless of Israel or not, they just cannot think of having him as a president. But there are others that are very supportive and believe that he's the right man. They don't like Kamala. That's where I'm getting to. It's outside of the Israeli question and that. And I think more important, they just find her very not spineless, but she hasn't really got the charisma. Even if you looked at a Michelle Obama, or if you even looked at a Hillary Clinton, and I'm talking about possible woman presidents and that, I don't think she's anywhere in their class. She doesn't come up to it. She's very sweet. She's pleasant. She's intelligent. But she's not a powerful politician. You know, I can't see her sitting around the group of 20 or dominating the group of seven discussions and that. Mm. I don't think she's that strong. So I think that's where a lot of people are kind of anti-Kamala. They might be anti-Trump as well, but they're also anti-Kamala from that point of view. You know, they don't find her strong enough, powerful, or intelligent enough.
Okay, we'll talk about politics later, but before we go back to Viv, David, the mood of people and the... Because Trump keeps on going on about, and again, I said I wouldn't mention politics until later, but he keeps on going on about inflation. They all do. But inflation's down. I mean, it's not... It's down from where it is. I mean, you go to Whole Foods, as you do, and it's... Okay, it's up, but inflation is always up. There's no way that you're ever going to get minus 2% like you do in China. It's always up. But why do they keep on harping on about this? Because it's old news. It's not a story anymore.
No, it's not a story. I don't think it's a story in any way at all. And again, I've been here for almost 3 weeks now. I've never heard people complaining about prices. Yes, prices go up, but I think that's... you know, that also depends on the weather. It depends on a whole lot of other factors here. But it's Lindsay, you know, I can't explain. When you go to New York and you see the throng of people, you know, and you see the shops just absolutely overflowing, you know, packed with people. Restaurants is always, you know, there's no emptiness there. So I know it's, I discussed this with you as well, I think last week as well, you know, New York is actually indicative of the demographics of what America's becoming.
Yes, you know, and just to let Viv in on this one, I said to David, Viv, that I keep on going on about New York and Boston, where David visits regularly, are not representative of the United States of America. But in fact, if you go to New York and you walk down the street, and after 10 minutes, you've seen 10 different nationalities and creeds of people. Viv. So, in fact, when you go to New York, despite the fact it's a wealthy city and is very cosmopolitan, it sort of encapsulates what America is all about. In other words, immigration and integration. Viv, just briefly, would you agree with that?
It's maybe what America is all about, but it's not what the election is all about, because the election is going to be held in states that have looked nothing like New York. See, that's the thing, like New York and California. And, you know, they may be the bigger part of the economy. They may have more people. You know, they may do many things, but they're not going to be reflective of Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, you know, Michigan. You think of these places, if you travel, you know, those places, they're not exactly New York City, you know what I mean? Mm. They are more like they're called Rust Belt, Sun Belt kind of places. They are more rural. They're more, you know, industrial. They're poorer also. And the thing with inflation, like you mentioned, is the number for inflation is the increase has stopped. But it takes a while to notice a stop, you know what I mean? So let's just say the price of milk goes up, you know, 10 times, and then stops for 2-3 months. You don't feel like you basically stopped inflation for 2-3 months. You still remember the price has gone up, you know, 10 times. And that's the thing with inflation. It takes a long time to feel inflation stopping. It's very easy to feel inflation increasing. And that, I think, is why it's a story there. But the one thing I want to mention about the election is interesting out there. I don't know if you guys follow Poly Markets.
No, I don't.
Poly Markets is this election. So it's a prediction market, right?
Okay.
And it's like apparently on the U.S. election, there's billions, literally billions of dollars on the line at the moment, betting on the election. And for some reason, something happened in the last week. It went from basically, I think about 50-something% to Harris to 40-something% to Trump, and it just reversed in the last week. It's been a pretty substantial, you know, change around. And people are saying, I don't know if you follow Mark Halperin. He's the guy that predicted Biden was going to drop out like 3 days before Biden did,
yeah.
Right? And he's saying that there's internal pollings, and there's an article in the Wall Street Journal about this as well, in which a senator, I can't remember the state she's from. She's a Democratic senator, and she's saying that her private polling, that's been a polling that her organization is doing, is showing Harris is significantly worse than the public polling in the places like the New York Times and so on is publishing. So I think there's a danger right now that Harris is letting these key states, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin and so on, slip away because these are the places that are going to determine things. It doesn't really matter what, despite Trump, I think, renting out Madison Square Garden to try and, you know, get New York. He's never going to get New York. He's never going to get California. You know what I mean? And despite Schumer saying that he's going to go to Texas, they're never going to get Texas. But Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, those are the places that count. And internal polling right now is saying there's a shift towards Trump that has happened in the last 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And you've seen that happen in polling markets. If you look at polling articles, you look at Polymarkets, until about a week ago, Harris was ahead and had been ahead for a few weeks. And then suddenly, out of nowhere, Trump goes up to 54, she's down at 45.
Is it because of his sort of emotional and, yeah. Oh, goodness me, I've been shot at twice? Is it because of that, Viv, do you think? Or David?
I think what happened is that she's lost any events. All the events that have happened so far, except for the assassination that happened before she became the nominee, were positive for her. So the debate worked in her favor. The Democratic conference worked in her favor. Replacing Biden, you get the euphoria of Biden going away, worked in her favor, right? But without any kind of event happening, she doesn't do media. Right. The media that she does do, I don't know if you've seen the 60 Minutes interview that she did.
I saw that.
Which was poor. She was poor.
Very poor. Very poor.
Yeah.
And then you watch Trump. And this is the interesting thing as well. You may not realize this, but about 10 million more women vote than men in the U.S. If the same amount of men voted as women, Trump would win in a landslide. If you notice what Trump has been doing recently, he's been going on these podcasts, but these very male podcasts. He went on a podcast called Call Me Daddy. Right, which is a big female podcast.
Yes.
But he's gone on things like with Andrew Schultz, he's gone with Theo Vaughn, he's done all these male-centric podcasts. And he goes in there and he just like, you listen to him speak, he's very charming. Like, there's a thing called the flagrant one, he's very, very charming. He's not the demagogue, even these guys who are more democratic on the podcast laugh at him. He's trying to get the male vote coming in. And that's I think, also what's affecting things here, because if you can get the male vote coming in, oh, and finally, one last thing. I don't know if you saw as well, Elon Musk is paying $42 for every person that's selling some petition. And you may think, okay, that's stupid because you could just fake selling the petition. But what it's actually doing is it's incentivizing people to go out and talk to people about Trump in the specific areas. And it's one of the most effective things you can do because effectively that knock on the door is something that, you know, is very persuasive. So, yeah, all these things are working really behind the scenes. But one final thing, if I go, there's a great funny interview, I don't know if you've seen it, with Elon Musk and Tucker Carlson.
Tucker Carlson, yeah, who used to be Fox News but was sacked from there. And it was the most absurd thing I've ever seen in my life. He said, if Harris wins, I'm going to be effed. And he'll probably go to jail or something. And he laughed and laughed and laughed and laughed. And I watched CNN after that, and this presenter, a woman called Abby Phillip, watched it, and her face went deadpan, a black woman, and she went ashen white, and she said, yeah, that's really hilarious, because he was talking about the assassination of Harris and why it wouldn't be worth it because she's a non-entity. And I just thought, and did you see, sorry to digress here, did you see Musk jumping up and down like an idiot on the stage?
Yeah.
David, you come in on this one because that offended me deeply.
I know. Mm-hmm. I know. And that's, but you know, what Viv says is that the thing is that Trump has got a lot more charisma when he gets in front of a crowd. You know, he knows how to stir them up.
Mm.
He knows, and correctly on the podcast. That's why I'm saying, you know, when I said that she hasn't got the personality, the power to be, she doesn't appear presidential. She appears to be a very nice, sweet lady, but she's not a powerful character, you know, that can hold her own against a Putin or against any of the leaders. You know, and I think this is where you're very worried now. We've got how many more weeks to go?
We've got 26 days. Yeah.
And he's on the move. You know, he's going. You heard Viv said he's going to Madison Square Garden. you know, and he just says that New York has been overrun by migrants. You know, in other words, we've got to take it back. He knows he's going to lose it. But, you know, he goes there with a message of anti-migration. And believe me, as I've said to you before, Lindsay, this country would fall apart without the migrants, you know, and it was built on migrants. It just would not function. But it's an emotive issue. And, you know, I'm sorry to say you feel the momentum shifting towards.
Definitely. But then, you know, it can shift again. It shifted toward Harris.
Have a look at him. He now has his hair coiffed nicely, not in 1970s style, slightly more up to date. You know, it's been cut a bit and it doesn't go wild and blow in the wind and everything. So he's on the charm offensive at the moment. And I'm afraid that this is going to be very, very close.
Well, I think it's going to be less close than we think. But on the other hand, after Harris and he debated, Harris went up a couple of points, but now she's gone down a couple of points because of all the things. But don't forget, Obama is coming in now. Barack Obama is coming in, and he will be by her side in every single event that she is hosting from now on. And that's a really, really big factor because he is eloquent. He has all the eloquence and charm and presence that she doesn't have. So I look forward to that. But I have to tell you, gentlemen, that I watched on X a live stream of his event in Pennsylvania last night.
Yes, I watched it.
He was outrageous. Do you know what he said? He said, she is spending $94 billion. Then he said, no, not $94 billion. She is planning to spend $94 trillion on cleaning up the air of America. And he said, that'll be good for the Chinese when they take over so they can breathe clean air. And I sort of did a second take. He was outrageous last night. I mean, kept on talking about the Congo, which doesn't exist, of course. It's two different countries. But anyway, kept on talking about the Congo, and they're letting people in from the Congo. And I've said this before. How do you get from the Congo to America if you've just been let out of prison? You're not going to get a visa. What are you talking about, you idiot? Viv, do you watch these Trump things like David and I do?
Not all. I watch some of the interviews he does, and I think that is the thing here. Like David said, he comes across charming. If you watch the, like I said, you watch the Andrew Schultz thing. Andrew Schultz is like a middle kind of the road kind of comedian. He is quite a big podcaster. He does a show with somebody called Charlemagne, and Charlemagne is if you know like American black culture, he does the biggest podcast or biggest radio show among black people. It's called The Breakfast Club. And so he's like a really big shot. And so this is like his co-host in some of his podcasts. And he did a show with him. And he comes across really like funny. He makes jokes about himself and that kind of thing. And he comes across as charming. And the thing about this year is that, unfortunately, the thing comes down to at the moment, not about what you're going to do or what your policies are. It really is about a popularity contest. You know what I mean? Yeah. And unfortunately, that's what politics is at the moment, a popularity contest. And there's, I think Harris tried to do something. I think Fox News offered him a debate at the end of the month. And he's probably going to say no to that, even though it's Fox News, which should be on his side doing it. Because he sees, basically, why do I bother if I'm going to win? Why do I put an obstacle that might maybe not win? You know? And so, it's a very... it looks like very strongly like he's got a chance. And here's the weirder thing. Sorry. If we assume that the polls are the same as they were in 2020 and 2016 in terms of how unbalanced they are against Trump, in terms of the voting, he's not just going to win. He's going to win in a landslide. Mm. We say the polls are even only because the polls come across as even. But remember in 2016 when he won, the polls were like 99% against him, 1% for him. I think the best one was saying 2-1 against him. This time he's 50-50. Okay? And if you look at even with Biden, the polls then overestimated Biden's support by like 4-5%. You know what I mean? He needs 1% against Harris to basically, you know, make it up. So they have not adjusted the polls, by the way. The polling is still the same as it was then. Because the polling assumes that the margin of error means that sometimes it's going to go in one direction, something or another. If twice went in one direction, it's just a bit of luck. So the chance of him winning and winning significantly is, I think, if I had to bet, I'd bet on him. I think Polly Markman is probably right. He has the edge here.
You're worrying me and depressing me both at the same time. But you're absolutely right, Viv. I'm terrified of what's going on now. And I do think
it's not good for South Africa.
It's not good for the world.
No, I know, for the world, but I mean for Africa as well. that, you know, he has no time for it, nothing.
No, and, he calls, and, I'm not going to say the word, but he calls the whole of Africa asshole countries. I mean, there's going to be nothing. If there's any money going into Africa or South Africa or any favourable trade deals, he's just going to get his great big fist out and just draw a big cross across those agreements, and it won't be good for them. And after what Woodward came up with in his book about the Putin calls and everything else, that's very, very dangerous. I don't know, people say, no, of course they should chat. I mean, it's diplomacy. No, it's nothing to do with diplomacy. It's to do with Trump saying, I'll do this because you know that I was in a hotel room in Moscow with three hookers. And I've got pictures of it. That's what it is. It really is. Gentlemen, the markets now, before we get on to more stuff. The dollar rand is 17.54. British pound against the rand is 22.88. And the euro rand is 19.15. Euro dollar 109.20 after the data today, so nothing much going on there. And British pound 130.50. Looks like there'll be a first black woman leader of the Conservative Party. And I must say, she's very good. She's very spicy. She says what she means, even if it offends people. Doesn't offend me. The gold price 26. Yeah, 26.25 up $19 an ounce. Platinum 976 up 28, and palladium up 29 to 10.66. The other commodities. That's interesting. The oil price has been very interesting. It's up strongly today again. It's all over the place, depending on which country is being bombed and by whom. $78.19 for Brent, up 2.1%, and West Texas 74.79. Also 2.1% higher. What else have we got? Copper up 0.7%. Yeah, coal down 2.5%. Steel up, actually doing nothing. But anyway, commodities after the China story, don't really know what to do. The S&P 500, record highs yesterday, record closing highs, slightly down today, 0.2% weaker. The December futures, 5,828. US 10-year Treasury, 4.10%. The South African 10-year bond is 9.32%, and Bitcoin, what is that thing doing? 60,700, let's call it, down nearly 2%. So, yeah, not much going on there. David, any South African corporate news we should...
I've been so out of it. And I haven't even got a computer here in Boston. I'm operating off an iPad. So I'm a little out of touch with what's happened over the last.
No, there hasn't been any.
There hasn't seen much. No.
No, there's not news. But Viv can come in on this one.
Yeah, I mean, I'll talk in South Africa. Also, I don't want us to forget to mention there's a big Tesla event tonight. I don't know if you've heard about that.
No, go on. What's he doing this time? Dancing? Jumping in the air? What's happening?
No, it's called We Robot. This is when he's going to unveil the robotaxi. Remember, it's always been Tesla. Yeah, the driverless vehicle.
Yes.
I don't know if David has seen any in the US at the moment, but Waymo is operating these vehicles right now. You can actually get a driverless vehicle taxi in the US from Waymo. And he's basically likely, that's the prediction, to announce his version of the driverless taxi today. It's called WeRobot. There's also the possibility it might be the Optimus Prime, something happening there, but it's most likely to be the robo taxi. There's been apparently videos of this thing, you know, going around, etc. And so, yeah, big AI news. In terms of the market, really weird kind of like thing. I mean, the platinum stocks aren't looking great. We're looking at Sibanye, like one of the biggest fallers today.
Down 8.3%. Is that not? That's not an ex-dividend story. That's a real price, is it? The Sibanye weakness today, Viv?
I didn't check that out. I don't think it is. Yeah, I think it is actually. Let me check this thing correctly.
But it's 17 rand 61. What was the high on that? It was in the 40s or 50s, wasn't it? Gosh, yeah. David, you would know this. You haven't got a computer, but Sibanye is
7.4. It was 7,500 at one stage.
Yeah, 75 rand a share and is now below 18. What an extraordinary story. The destruction of wealth in that one. Because it was the darling at one stage, obviously. Sorry, Viv, we interrupted you.
No. It basically, it happened basically in the middle of the day. They lost the court case, and that's kind of hurt them. Mm. But it's about 1.2 billion that they may be liable for damages. So it's that's what's hurting them there. At the same time, we also see among the positive stocks a lot of gold producers. You know, Harmony is up, AngloGold is up, DRD is up. You know, it's also it's a bit of a bifurcated market. In terms of other stocks out there, Sasol is one of the big gainers of the day as well, and you can make sense of that because of the volatility of oil going higher. And in the fall, straight enough, the process was down. You know, we're not going to talk about China, but you know, you would think that when they introduced this, what's it, $5 trillion or $500 billion, you know, stabilization fund, the market would expect, you know, to be politically stable. But unfortunately, I think that the issues in China are pretty, you know, negative, I think, at the moment.
Well, they had the Golden Week, which is their week off, and they were also celebrating the 75th anniversary of the foundation of the People's Republic of China in 1937. And everyone very optimistic, and the share prices went through the roof. And yet in the last 2 days, they've had the worst period for, I think, 27 years or something for China equities, the biggest falls. And it's strange, and that it doesn't engender much confidence in China. David, I don't know if you're a China investor or if you look for opportunities.
It is unpredictable. It's unpredictable. You can't call it. And I know that they were disappointed and waiting for further stimulus, which is absolutely needed. And now the whole story is waiting for the end of all those celebrations and various talks on fiscal policy to see if anything else does come. Mm. But it's very difficult to read. Look, you know, it's still a massive economy, still contributes hugely to world growth, you know, as does India. But to invest there is becoming more and more difficult. And Viv was talking about process and Naspers. Yes, they recovered on the 10-cent recovery that we have seen. But, you know, that's also got to be sustainable. And it's always a worry, Lindsay, with recovery stocks, even the SA market. You know, we come from a very low point and we I don't want to say a knee-jerk reaction. Everyone gets excited. But you need sustainability. You know, you need follow-through for those markets to continue. And, you know, it's very difficult to see it against the backdrop that you said of stagflation. I don't believe in stagflation, but I think the economy takes, you know, certainly the American economy is more service orientated than investment orientated. So just got to be very careful about how you play it, just with caution, not with great excitement. It will go up with the rest of the world as growth returns, but it's not, you know, and I'm talking mainly China and South Africa as well, which is commodity driven. Just be careful. Think it through.
Okay, we'll do so. Let's have a look at the stocks. I mean, Viv has very well described the ups and the downs on the JSE today, but I'll just reiterate what he said. Harmony, top of the list, up 4.3%. AngloGold Ashanti up 4.1%. DRD Gold up 3.6%. Sasol, a 3.4% winner. On the downside, Sibanye-Stillwater. Gosh, how the mighty have fallen. 8.3% weaker, R17.61 per share. Bytes down 8%, Mondi down 3.7% after a really good day yesterday after they bought something somewhere in Europe. And I'm sorry for being so vague, but anyway, they did. And people are saying, well, hello, what's that all about? 3.3% down for PHP Prop and Northam's down nearly 2%. David, can you give us the closing indices before we come to our closing comment? Oh, you can't, can you?
All I know is that I can give you the FTSE. The top 40 index was down.
Oh, no, I can give you these. Don't you worry, David. Don't you worry. You get your closing thoughts together on what you think is going to happen in the next couple of weeks. But I've got the top 40 flat at 77,368. Industrials down 0.6%. Financials are flat. It's a boring day. Let's put it that way. The all-share itself, 85,393 on the day, which again is essentially flat. So yeah, not much going on the JSE, which is unusual after the US inflation data. Viv, any AI news? Didn't I say something about ChatGPT and its a market valuation of 150 billion or something, Viv? I tend to turn off. And the reason I turn off, as an aside, is because after 150 years of having linesmen at the Wimbledon tennis championships, they've been scrapped because of AI and technology. So you've got lots of unemployed lines people walking around London at the moment looking for a job. I mean, come on, Viv, that's not right.
No, but I mean, if you look at the latest version they gave it out, right, this preview version, and there's a guy called, I don't know if you know Terence Tao. He's considered to be the greatest mathematician in the world, right?
Got a Nobel Prize or something.
A Fields Medal, Fields Medal. You don't get a Max Prize from the Nobel. But he basically came out and said he's looked at and he's played with the GPT thing. This is the case where, you know, it can do things that, unfortunately, I don't have the intellect to judge whether or not it's smart or not. You know what I mean? It's smarter in the area, in such a level that I can't judge it. But the mathematical jump up that it's done, it has put it in the level, he says, as a mediocre to like good graduate student in mathematics, right? It helps him. Okay, this is Terence Tao, do problem solving. Now, if something can help Terence Tao, trust me, I don't know about you guys, but I could barely, like, you know, hold the pen that he's writing with, you know what I mean? That's how smart he is. He has like a 200 IQ stuff. The stuff he could do at 7, I can't do now. But he's basically saying that this is a step up in a way. And so, yeah, the GPT stuff is one. But the interesting thing about this, and this is also, I don't know if you guys know, that Sam Altman, right, who somebody said once, put him on an island of cannibals, he'd come back in 5 years, he'd be the king. He is the sole remaining executive at OpenAI, right? He's converted OpenAI from being a non-profit company to a for-profit company, like Lindsay mentioned, worth $150 billion.
Yeah.
He's been awarded $10 billion of those dollars, by the way, as a stock thing.
Gosh.
And here's the thing. This guy basically has managed to do this all while claiming that he's working for the love of this thing. He really does come across, I mean, as somebody that's the absolute psychopathic, business person. He looks to be somebody that says what he needs to say, does what he needs to do, and yet at the end of the day comes out with the most money, the most power. He fired the board that's supposed to be able to fire him. He changed everybody else that said no to him or was even a threat to his power is gone from the company. And he's trying to raise money right now, okay? And this is where the $150 billion valuation comes from. And one of the rules for investing in his company is that you can't invest in the company formed by his former, basically, people that work there, like Anthropic, or the guy that used to be his chief scientist, Ilya. So he's not only basically trying to make sure that he's throwing his company, he's trying to cut off funding for all the other AI companies out there at the same time. A real tough businessman, this guy is.
As David Viv said that he wouldn't be able to hold the pen of the mathematician that he was talking about. I think after hearing what we've just what he's just said, that maybe he could. The thing that bugs me is that mathematician, these geniuses of which we speak, are they all happy? David, you're happy walking around Central Park every day, aren't you?
Yeah.
Exactly.
I'm not after making that kind of money. I'm quite happy just looking at the flowers. But, you know, credit to Sam Altman, I mean, and the release of ChatGPT at the right time, November 22, which really changed everything and brought it to our attention.
Yes.
I think you've got a lot of those kind of people hovering around in the cutthroat U.S., market. It's, that's what makes America. It's not for sissies, you know, and this place, if you don't perform, you're out the next day. You're not even given 24 hours. You're given a note, an hour. They cut down your computer, give you a pink slip, and that's it, and an agreement to sign. And that's America. You know, that's the kind of competition Lindsay, just on that, being with family here and being around people who came from South Africa, mainly ex-South Africans, a lot of, other people as well. But what interests me and what is so fascinating is culture of choosing your college. The kids are in now, my granddaughter now is in, she's a senior and she's now full into choosing where she's going to go as a college. And this is a industry, choosing a college as an industry. It's not, you haven't got, oh, I'm going to go to UJA or I'm going to Cape Town, Stellenbosch or Wits, whatever. So this is, you've got country, you've got many, many choices, and all of them are good colleges and all, in a way, businesses. So, but where I come to is that it breeds, you breed this intellect that is so competitive. You know, it's not just open for you to, my dad's, he runs a grocer down the road that gives me security. This is far from it. It is a very, very competitive country. And you have to start from the time, Viv, you send your kids to nursery
school.
That's
what I was going to say to Viv. I was going to say, say in 16, 17 years' time, 18 years' time, Viv, when your youngster is not so young anymore, where is that child going to go? Are you going to say, well, South Africa? Are you going to send her overseas or something to go to Yale or Harvard or wherever it is, Wharton Business School? I mean, it's an interesting decision, isn't it?
Yeah. The scary thing for me is that because I'm so into the AI stuff, I look at the technology developing, and I don't know what job, what I can trade her for. My brother had this vision of his daughter, right? So, not to like little family bees, but he wanted her to be an artist. He saw AI company. He's an engineer. He thought this thing was going to happen. So his daughter plays like the flute. She paints. She sculpts. She does a whole bunch of stuff. And then you see the first thing that this thing does is it plays music. It draws. It does video. You know what I mean? The first thing it takes down is art. You know what I mean? And then you say, okay, maybe be a programmer. And other programmers are losing their jobs. I don't know what career she could have in 20 years' time that this thing can't do.
You know, where I'm getting at as well, Lindsay, and it's so important from being South African, is that you realize that, you know, the world is getting smarter. Certainly the U.S. is getting smarter. And I'm not sure we can keep up with it. You know, and each year that goes by, we actually slip a little behind. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with our varsities or anything wrong with our schools, because there's some really excellent private schools as well. But as a population, as a, you know, even as a continent, you know, we just slip further and further behind. You know, and Lindsay, thank goodness I'm old, because I wouldn't know how I could survive in this kind of environment.
You'd survive,
it's so different. It's so different from the way we were brought up. You know, and when I meet all the kids, you know, which are like almost grandkids to me, that age, they're at Yale, they're at Brown, they're at a math school. I don't know if you've heard of this one, Colby.
No.
I don't know. Which is, you know, maths. I'm talking to Viv as well, who might know the best math schools in the U.S. But math school, I mean math colleges. But, this is tough. You know, when I say the kids have it tough, and if you're going to survive and do well, which you can, it's you must see my grandkids come home 9 o'clock, 9:30. They do all the extramurals. Lindsay, the other point. Sorry, I know we're going on because I won't speak to you next week.
No, this is interesting. Well, what are you doing next week? What's wrong with next week?
No, I'll be flying home.
Oh, I see.
But, but what I wanted to say is my grandson is – I went to watch him play. You've got to call it soccer here. You can't call it football otherwise.
Of course not.
You're talking about that other game. But, you know, he's in the he plays for his school. He's still a junior, which means he's like – you know, next to a senior, and he's a pretty good player. I watch them. They train virtually every day. You know, this is not – when I was at Wits playing high-level soccer, we might have trained 1 hour twice a week or something like this. These kids train every
day. That is unhealthy, David. I'm sorry. And again, I'm digressing now to both of you. I watched an episode of Boston Legal, which is one of my favorite legal programs, old things with James Spader and William Shatner and what's that beautiful woman's name? Ah, I can't remember anyway. There was a court case, and the woman was suing the school because her child, who committed suicide, no, she fell asleep at the wheel and crashed her car and died. And she sued the school because there was so much pressure to do well. And she felt that she had to stay and do 3 or 4 hours after normal school hours. And she was so exhausted that that's what it did. I don't know if it's healthy, David. And Viv will come on this in a second.
Yeah, let me point something out, right? If you look at the people that work the hardest, South Korea, most hours at school, hardworking people, and so on. Japan, they did the same thing. It gets you far. It gets you far. It gets you to like almost to a first world country level. But the U.S. has something different. The U.S. is so much richer than South Korea. It's like twice as wealthy as South Korea, twice as wealthy as Japan per person, right? And the reason is not because they are the hardest working. It's not because they are the grinders. It's because they have the spark, the inspiration. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think also, if you look at South Africans going to the U.S., and David mentioned our schools maybe falling behind, actually South African immigrants are some of the wealthiest immigrants in the U.S. And the top two or three, I think, are wealthiest immigrants in the U.S., South Africans. And not just because of Elon Musk.
I could see it,
And the reason is I think it's that freedom. And we were just weirdly enough discussing this at work and talking about the Norwegians and the Danes, who at one time were Vikings. And I don't know if you meant not to be like offensive, yeah. But like Norwegians and Danes are like
one of them plays for Man City, yeah.
They are the opposite of what the demeanor of a Viking is nowadays, isn't it? A Norwegian person is the opposite of the marauding pirate of the past that you would imagine. Same with the Dane, right? And I think that yes, obviously they're probably nicer people for being that, but there is a spark that's lost when you just basically work it out and grind it out. There is something to be said for the daydreamers and the crazy people in the world. Yeah.
Gosh, what a lot to think about, David. You want to end this very illuminating discussion with your final thoughts, please?
No, I'm saying in the Boston community here, as I said, which are mainly made up of, that my daughter hangs out with, mainly expats here, all of them have done incredibly well. All their kids are at good schools. And you can see the opportunity that they've been given, which is, I doubt, would have been given in South Africa. They can become ministers of finances or secretary of the treasuries or go and rise in politics and so on. And I think that's, Viv, you bring up a very important point. It is the freedom here to do what you want to do and the pressure as well. You do have peer pressure in that, but still, successful and rich. When I say rich, Boston, when you go around New York, you go around Boston, I'm not talking about ex-South African. I mean, the level of wealth here is something that we can't quite comprehend. It's just beyond us.
Okay. On that note, we will leave it. Gentlemen, thank you very much, as always, for such a fascinating chat on all sorts of different matters. That was the 5 o'clock shadow. Viv Govender is from Rand Swiss in Johannesburg. David Shapiro speaking to us from Boston. He's from Sasserin Securities. And as I said, that's the 5 o'clock shadow. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.